Hello and welcome to Mess Explores with Xavier and Alan, where as always we'll be looking at all manner of films from around the world. Now remember to follow and subscribe to us on your favourite listening platform, as well as on Facebook, Instagram and YouTube, in order to stay up to date and get some extra goodies. This week we're floating down a river on Jungle Cruise, so hard to starboard. Hello Alan!
Hello Xavier, and of course hello to our favourite fans, welcome to Mess Explores. Before we hike through the jungle in search of magical petals that will revolutionise the scientific age, remember as always our podcasts are best enjoyed for those who've seen the film prior, as we contain spoilers. As Xavier said, we are looking at Jungle Cruise, which is a 2021 Disney film directed by Jaume Collet-Serra. The film is based on Disneyland's theme park ride, where a small riverboat takes a group of travellers through a jungle filled with dangerous animals with also a supernatural element. Jungle Cruise stars Dwayne Johnson, Emily Blunt, Edgar Ramirez, and Jack Whitehall, just to name a few. So Xavier, with that being said, let's get straight into the film. What did you think?
Well, the opening feels a little like Jumanji meets the Mummy. You know, Rachel Weisz on a ladder, the intelligent daughter of someone past, indulged unwittingly by men, who ultimately shows them up. So it felt like a story that we've seen before and we knew where it was going to go. I loved all the dad jokes, Dwayne Johnson's always big on them, but this kind of felt like he was gunning for his own daughters this time, and I felt like that was a nice little touch. And it's always good to see Hollywood's nice guy just being out there and having fun and being himself. But things that didn't quite look themselves, some of the special effects really let this down, you know, particularly the Jaguar, which was prominent in a number of scenes, just looked a little bit fake, and some of the character development was a little bit flimsy at times. But on the whole, this was an enjoyable film.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Xavier. The film was very reminiscent of The Mummy, but with a supernatural twist and obviously a new jungle location. The trio's combination of the male leader, who's bound for all action, the intelligent and witty female co-lead, and the humor element character, and in both cases, which is the brother. Even though a lot of the skeletal foundations are comparable, where this film differs is in its portrayal of the female co-lead. I felt that Disney turned the notches on the female empowerment dial to meet demands of today's era. I believe that this film also made room for the comedic character to have a backstory where he comes out as gay and how he's been ridiculed for it by the people in his social circles and of that era. I do find it interesting how studios are changing the tide of time and incorporating characters that haven't graced the screen in previous decades. Now, the Jaguar did look a bit fake, Xavier, and we've probably mentioned this on our previous episodes, but when you have a big budget studio with the capacity to create realistic CGI, the effort should be implemented to ensure that that's actually accomplished. The Jaguar wasn't awful, but it was very noticeable, and when it becomes noticeable, it detracts from the film.
Look, I can't say I entirely agree with this assessment so far as the characters are concerned. I think if comparing Rachel Weisz and Emily Blunt, each woman held their own in an otherwise male-dominated cast and narrative. But as I've said many a time before in other episodes, I lose all respect for studio when they try to ram an agenda down our throats. You can have a gay character, but make it part of their natural and organic identity as a character. Don't just shoehorn in a 45-second conversation just to deliver context to something which is otherwise non-existent in the narrative or character development. Now, we've reviewed some films which have done a stellar job of bringing such themes in the past, but this was another film in the not quite right path for me. But there have also been other criticisms of this film. Do you want to go into some of them at this juncture?
Yeah, so previous critics of Disney theme park ride have sort of stated that previously they've been known for their mid-century American colonial abrasiveness and casual racism. But in this film, the director and the team of writers have managed to, and for the most part, drop those elements and make the film's aura feel like it's taking place out of this universe. The team has really ramped the fantasy elements up a notch, and there's this great repertoire between its co-leads. The banter really cements the film into an enjoyable category. One of the most notable moments of this film is the lack of sexual chemistry between Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson. Now, there are times when Blunt gives The Rock these fleeting looks of intimacy, but it doesn't seem to be reciprocated by her co-star. For me, this diluted the relationship between them in the film. But having said that, the energy they both bring to the table is uncanny. And often I find them changing the pace as the narrative is needed, and they both take turns to do this. And I have to commend the writers for allowing that dynamic and pace shifting to occur, and also for the actors for being able to deliver and work alongside each other to bring their characters to life. Fortuitously, the film's constricted structure and abundant action scenes also enable it to be sort of carried forward.
I have to admit, I'm always wary of films based on theme park attractions because they can either get it really right or really wrong. And having not been on the ride this film is based on, I can't really comment on what sort of context claims of racism and colonialism are derived, except to note that the writer's from the 1950s, so some lingering gist of its inception period is probably likely. Now, you can't go wrong with a Dwayne Johnson film. You know, whatever happens, it'll just be something you'll likely enjoy, provided you don't take it too seriously. So on that front, I wasn't overly concerned by the poor relationship dynamic between Dwayne and Emily's characters, but I will reiterate that I thought it was poor. It neither fell into the friendship category nor the romantic space completely throughout the film, and yet it tried to dump us at a romantic ending in the final few minutes, which was pretty shabby writing in my opinion, given it was overly predictable where the ending was actually going to end up.
You really can't go wrong with The Rock's Save, and he's become such a bankable actor who's constantly delivering and is quite entertaining. But some of his movies tend to be aimed at specific age groups, and at times I feel like for me it's hard to palate. I want to see The Rock in more of a true detective type role, or maybe something even more obscure.
Come on. I like him doing his kiddie stuff. I find it very satisfying, and it feeds a 14-year-old in me. In much the same way as Adam Sandler feeds a 16-year-old in me. Not everything needs to be so serious to be good. Sometimes good can just be about how it makes us feel and not some potential cinematic masterpiece. That being said, this was no masterpiece and felt like everything had been pulled from other films. Everything about this film reminded me of other films to the extent it seemed as though the writers and producers had just taken the bits they liked from other films and chucked them all together. But somehow it worked. For instance, the village in the trees reminded me of the Ewok village in Return of the Jedi. The villain that sort of had the tendrily roots reminded me a little bit too much of Groot. The tree and most of the premise for it was just a pink version of the tree for Avatar, and the Medusa type effects reminded me of Clash of the Titans. I did like Proxima the Murder Cat though. It was a funny play on words, and in Portuguese it means next. Each cat being La Proxima literally means the next, as in the next cat, presumably as after almost 400 years, Dwayne's character simply couldn't be bothered naming them anymore.
I feel like sometimes writers need to be more creative with villains and with what they can do. Rather than just imitating or borrowing from previous films, there should be no limits for their creativity. I did like the villain who metamorphed into a bee villain and he kept tasting the nectar that was sort of oozing from him, and I thought that was sort of, you know, a little bit more authentic and a bit more original.
Yeah, that was cool.
And Save, you always seem to be finding these little tidbits and I'm loving it, mate. The reference of the name is just simply genius, and not a lot of people will actually Google a leopard's name midway through the movie, so kudos to you for doing that. Now, when you mentioned that this film reminded you of other films, this was such a pity, Save, because it does take away the authenticity of the narrative. And these big studios are comfortable with what they know and what works. It's a shame that only if they invested as much time into delivering something new, but while maintaining the same magical pizzazz that we're used to, it would have sort of been a classic. And I feel like that's what happened with the first Pirates of the Caribbean and with Brendan Fraser's The Mummy. But having said that, Save, let's have a quick chat about the characters in this film and what they evoked. So I want to start with Emily Blunt. What did you think of her character?
Look, I'm never quite sure what to make of Emily Blunt. As an actress, I like her most of the time, but I feel like she hasn't really found the type of roles that suit her to a T. She was definitely fun in this film and brought a sort of charm to the role, but I also felt a little bit confused as to whether she was the damsel or the dame. But this is probably more to do with the writing and development of her character. However, I do feel she probably had credible input into her character development. So I remain on the fence with how I feel about her in this film, as again, I'm forced to compare her in my mind with Rachel Weisz in this type of role. And in my opinion, I feel like Rachel did it so much better.
Mate, I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with you here. I can't get enough of Emily Blunt. And I like what she brings to the table, and she didn't disappoint in this film. But leaving my bias aside, I did ask my question, did she bring her own flair into the role, a role that we've seen in previous movies? And to be honest with you, I think to an extent she did. But where it falls short is the chemistry and the romance between the two co-leads. And that was a bit of a disappointment for me. But speaking of co-leads, let's go to Dwayne Johnson, Save. The Rock. Tell me what The Rock is cooking tonight.
I love Dwayne Johnson. Even when he does bad, he does good, because in a way we kind of expect that roguish laissez-faire attitude and delivery from him all the time. It's his style, and he always hits his style. So whilst it may not be a brilliant performance by any stretch, it's also exactly kind of what we expected from him, because he knows his type of roles and his audience, and he's found his niche in the world of cinema, a place which so few genuinely actually do. So we just kind of have to accept that he delivered exactly what we expected, and that kind of is the definition of a good actor, even if we don't love the type of role. So while I wasn't particularly enamored with the character that he played in this film, and I'm not going to try and compare his performance in this to the likes of Robert De Niro in one of his astounding films, I think he hit all the right notes. So I'm not going to be overly critical of Dwayne in this film.
Interesting. Well, Johnson, the skipper of a decrepit, unstable riverboat. Initially, the viewers experience him swindling tourists into seeing fake sights such as savage natives, the back of waterfalls, and giant hippos that actually don't belong to that part of the jungle. It sort of felt a bit outdated. But he brings the energy into the role and he owns it. His charisma carries the film with Blunt matching his aura. But is this one too many of the same type of role for Dwayne? I feel like he has the ability to push the boundaries a bit, explore new territory. I'm really keen to see how he stacks up as Black Adam, and I hope he's going to blow it out of the park, and I'm sure he will. But Dwayne, if you're listening, mate, mix up the roles. Give us more. Give us more of the potential that you have.
No, Dwayne, don't. I love what you do.
All right, Sabe, let's move on to Jack Whitehall.
Look, as I said, the homosexual narrative was unnecessary for this character, as he was a meaningless and vapid character whose sole purpose was to be the writer's tool of convenience just to move the story along. He was an expositional ploy to show us things such as Proxima in the hold or to lead the evil Germans to the waterfall. He was otherwise pointless and the film could have done without him on the whole, and I felt like Jack kind of knew this, as there was this sort of aimless lethargy that I felt to his performance. So I don't think he was particularly memorable in any way, shape nor form, and honestly, I think the film probably would have been better off without him.
Interesting. For me, Whitehall was a nice comedic touch, and I can't blame him for the shortcoming of the script. I feel like he did his job, but I have to say, Nigel from The Mummy is the OG brother of comedy for me.
100%. I mean, that's sort of the character he was rebirthing in a way.
Now, one character I don't want to overlook is Jesse Plemons. For me, Plemons stole the show between the antagonists. He had this cuddly dictator aura, but deep down he reeked of sociopath. And maybe for the classifications they toned down his character, but he was thoroughly enjoyable.
We seem to be spraying this whole acting thing from opposite sides of the field, because I felt he was a typical cookie-cutter bad guy. A busker from the street could have pulled that performance off, and I really have nothing else to say about him.
That's how I felt about Edgar Ramirez.
Well, tell me what you thought about Edgar Ramirez.
Not much, mate, not much. And I can't blame Edgar here. I think it's just the way that the script was written. There wasn't much scope for him, and he came and he played his part to a T, but there wasn't anything memorable about his performance that, you know, I walked away with.
Okay, so we're going to agree on this one, because I was a little bit conflicted about the baddies in this film, because Edgar played the baddie that was central and yet somehow also second fiddle to Prince Joachim, which was played by Jesse Plemons. I wasn't overly impressed, and he wasn't overly memorable. So I think you're right. A number of these characters are actually getting let down on the front of the narrative and the writing of this film.
I've got to ask you, Zane, where do you think the plot's going to go from here?
Well, if it's anything like The Mummy Returns, I expect they'll have a kid imbued with some kind of ancient power because of his father, and he'll naturally have a relationship with jungle beasts, so when they return, because the peddler is giving the skipper visions, all manner of shenanigans will be got up to, and ultimately, just like in Jumanji, they'll save the jungle.
I feel like you've actually wrote the script for the second part.
Well,
you heard it here first, folks. Let me tell you that.
Look, although my idea, despite being a blatant ripoff of The Mummy Returns, it actually does kind of sound okay to me.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing the second part. Disney, if you want someone to correct your script, please contact us on Mess Explores.
Yes, please.
But, okay, now what would you like this franchise to actually develop into?
You mean aside from my brilliant idea?
Of course.
I wouldn't. Leave it alone.
Right.
I don't think we need a second film for this. I really don't. And if we do get anything, I would be very surprised if it isn't a rehash of The Mummy.
Interesting. You like it for the solo film it is. I feel like this is a cash cow for Disney.
Yeah, maybe, but I think the cash cow here is Dwayne Johnson, not necessarily this film.
Not the narrative, okay. Interesting. Well, Dwayne, like, you were enjoyable, mate. I really liked him in the film. I just feel like he can do more. But I'm talking about his potential here, not his limitations. Having said that, Sabe, let's move into cinematography, and I'll tell you what I thought. At times, I felt like the production was a little bit artificial, and one can't but ask that if this was filmed in the iconic Disney world that we've come to know and love. One of the biggest problems with this film, and this is something that we've mentioned earlier, is its dicey CGI. On smaller animals and reptiles, this wasn't an issue, but when it comes to the larger ones, the distinction was clear. It raises the question whether the digital designers were overworked or if the production was hurried due to studio demands. It's unclear, but it's definitely noticeable. The editing had an abruptness to it. There's not enough time to appreciate the serenity of the landscape or the frame that we're being shown. If only the camera lingered a tad longer, I feel like the viewer would just appreciate the frame and the images could be iconic and we could go home remembering specific scenes. But I've completely forgotten some of the set pieces.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would have even tolerated them shoehorning in a desaturated female line from The Lion King if it meant we got good CGI at a cut price by using existing 3D models and then passing it off as a black Jaguar. Alas, no, we got some questionable effects. On the whole, though, I can look past some of that, but as you touched on, what really didn't work for me was the world building. Somehow this film felt disconnected from its own world, and I think you're right in saying we somehow moved through it just too fast. We never got the chance to be engrossed in it, and even scenes where we got to see the tree and the petals and the moon and then all wilted, it just happened so quickly. We never even sort of felt this connection with this ancient mystical tree that's been lost for centuries, and I think that was a real shame because we wanted to feel like we were along on this jungle cruise, but at no point did I feel like I was ever a part of it.
Yeah, and that's a shame. That's a shame. Well, having said that, Save, shall we wrap this film up?
Okay, so I'll kick this off. In essence, this film was a remake of Brendan Fraser's The Mummy, but set in the Amazon. The tropes were the same, the type of comedy was similar, the narrative arc was almost identical, and the character's portrayal was exceptionally similar too. People back from the dead but cursed, a temple underground, an array of means of travel, both set roughly in the same time period, with a woman hailing from English aristocracy, ultimately ending with the schmuck getting the woman and returning to England with their treasure. There was also the dorky brother as seen from The Mummy 2, with much the same personality. Furthermore, Dwayne Johnson was in both films, which coincidentally was also his first foray into cinema. This was a harmless enough film, though, and probably a much-needed reprieve for many an audience in recent times. It's in no way what I would call brilliant cinema, but it did exactly what it says on the tin. It gave us a jungle cruise. So I'm actually going to give this film a 6 out of 10.
Ooh, same. Okay. For me, Jungle Cruise was a swashbuckling blockbuster about two brave souls who's continuously bickering along the way to one another's hearts, all in the midst of confronting trapped, cursed souls, a German general, and the perils of the jungle. Even though at times this film feels predictable and derivative, it doesn't detract too much from the narrative. But where it fails is a lack of chemistry between the two stars. With the inclusion of dad jokes and slapstick comedy, it falls short from the benchmark of its predecessors have set. Where Jungle Cruise lacks in heartthrob, it makes up for in mise-en-scene and execution. It may be a paycheck film for many of its actors, but it seemed like the entire team was having fun, and for that reason, I'm going to give this film a 6 out of 10 save.
Okay, well, that's all from us, folks. Next week, by fan request, we're checking out Navarasa, which is a 9-part anthology on Netflix, which we'll be releasing over 3 weeks, looking at 3 episodes from the anthology each week. And remember, you can also let us know what you'd like us to do too. Just drop us a comment on our socials. But until then, we hope you've enjoyed yet another episode from us. And remember to give us a follow and subscribe on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and recommend us to your friends and family. Until next week, though, goodbye from us.
See you all next week, and don't forget to like, subscribe, and share, and tell all your friends about this show, guys, and we really appreciate your support. And goodbye.